Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Presented by Siltahara Motors, the home of the zero down with Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. Regardless of your financial standing, no one should be without a vehicle. Visit the special financing section at sthmotors.com.
Go to 1043thefan.com and subscribe to The Fan Daily for the latest columns, blogs, news, videos, and more sent directly to your inbox every weekday morning.
I am doing Millennial Ben. We'll get to that here, presented by Breaks Plus in just a second. But, yeah, I mean, he's a good defensive player. Yeah, but you want to be spending that kind of money on a guy that's known for his defense?
But, again, if your coach, if that's your coach's mantra, and every night – it's about going out and playing defense and going out and showing toughness. You know, what do we always say about Michael Jordan? What do we say about LeBron James? He's the guy that sets the tone at practice. He's the guy that goes out and does those things. So sometimes you need those guys on your roster. Yeah, we would like to have more offensive production. I get that. But I think part of the other part of it, Mike, is, you know, you talk about NBA contracts. That's not a, max deal contract.
No, you know? It's not. But
in NBA parlance.
But it's still pretty significant.
It is significant, but in NBA parlance, it's not break the bank unless you don't have a TV deal. Oh, wait.
Let's get to question mark. And this goes back to the odds that are out there as to what team Tom Brady's going to play for if he does not go back to New England.
Yeah.
You think it's going to be the Chargers or the Raiders.
Yeah.
And this question comes in on the RonaldSlot.com text line, 303-713-1043. Mark, why do you think Brady would want to go to the same division as Mahomes? Don't you think he'd want to avoid Mahomes?
I think that Tom Brady's afraid of competing against Mahomes? No. I mean, didn't Tom Brady beat Mahomes in an AFC Championship playoff game?
He did.
Okay.
Did he just not lose to Mahomes this year at home?
Sure, but I don't think you get to play 20 years in the NFL and win 6 Super Bowls and go to 9 leading your football team and have everyone and their brother's uncle says you're the best quarterback. There's no debate who the best quarterback in the history of the game is. I don't think you make decisions based upon, well, I'm afraid of competing against that guy. I don't want to go compete against that guy. Do you understand how stupid that sounds to me? Are you afraid to compete? You don't make it. Hey, if he's afraid to compete, he doesn't come out of Michigan as a 6th-round draft choice and make the New England Patriots. He was so competitive as a rookie and did so many things that were outrageous to them that they kept him as the 4th quarterback on their roster.
4 active quarterbacks, yes.
Because there was something special that they saw in him. Like, if you're afraid to compete, if that's how you make your decisions, well, I don't want to have to go to that team because I don't want to compete against that guy. Then, I mean, I just don't think Type A alpha dudes that compete for a living think about things like that.
Okay. Which team gives them the better chance to win? Chargers or Raiders?
That's interesting to me. I think right now it's the Chargers. I think the Chargers defensively have a better roster with Derwin James and some of the players they have. The two bookend guys and Bosa and Ingram. So I think they have a better defense. Obviously I think their receiving core is depends on what happens with Hunter Henry and a couple other guys, but I think they've got a pretty legit football team. They need to address their offensive line, some of the issues they've had there, but, they can get that done in the offseason. The Raiders are interesting and intriguing to me because I think defensively they did a great job last year with Crosby off one edge and Furl off the other edge and some of the things they did, but they still linebacking core, secondary, still a work in progress, and they have got to have some playmakers on the outside. They have got to, but they are a team. You know, we just talked about Denver, not being one receiver away in the draft of competing. The Oakland Raiders are a team that if they, like, if they get a big time wide, whether it's in free agency or whether it's in the draft, they get a big time receiver or two, they've got the makings offensively of a team that can hang, you know, 25 points on you a game.
Some more on the RumbleSlot.com text line. Brady spent his whole career competing in a crappy division. I'm pretty sure he doesn't want to play against Mahomes every year, much less twice a year.
I mean, the guy's got six world championships, guys.
True, but he does. Texture brings up a good point. I mean, they have feasted on a terrible division.
All right,
20 years.
Okay, he was drafted in that division. It is not his fault.
No, but he recognizes the benefits of being in a crappy division.
If he goes to
the Raiders, then he's competing against Chiefs, Chargers, who Anthony Lynn believes if Tyrod Taylor was the quarterback instead of Phillip Rivers, they would have been a playoff team this year, and a Broncos team that we think is bouncing off the bottom, hopefully. If he goes to the Chargers, you compete against the Chiefs, a Broncos team that would appear to be getting better, and a Raider team that even if they stay with Derek Carr is one or two offensive, explosive additions away from being a much improved team.
So...
What I'm saying is that if he chooses to go to the Raiders or the Chargers, he is coming into a division that is far more competitive than the crappy AFC East he's been dominating for 20 years.
Which is fine. He got drafted that division. That division hasn't done much. I would say that Brady is part of the reason that division has not done much to catch Tom Brady. But if you think he's like, I just think it's a real flawed premise to sit there and think that Tom Brady is going, where can I go that has a real crappy division so I've got a chance to win? If Tom Brady has weapons around him, you think Tom Brady feels like he can't win regardless of where he's playing? I don't buy the mentality. You know, that's to me is the loser's limp mentality. If I'm competing, I'm competing to win regardless of where I go. I don't care. You know, I don't care who's playing on the other side. And I think most athletes, most guys, especially guys who have had some success, would tell you that, it's global, Jim. I'm better than you, and I know it.
Here come the Gary Harris defenders on the RamosLaw.com text line. But, guys, Gary Harris is probably our best defensive player. Did they mention that Harris is the third best defensive rating for a shooting guard? Gary Harris plays defense. Name another defender on this team that can guard all the point guards in the West. See, you're buying into the narrative here. And I get it, because this is what you hear from Michael Malone all the time about defense, defense, defense. Folks, come on, you got a taste of it last year. In the NBA playoffs, the game tends to slow down a little bit more. It becomes more of a half-court game than it does during the regular season. Teams, everybody puts more attention on playing defense. So, you know what then becomes the most important thing? Is to have guys that can make shots. To have guys that offensively, when things slow down and become more of a half-court game, that you have difference makers offensively. And that, to me, remains the Achilles heel for this Nuggets team come playoff time, is do they have enough
outside
of Jokic, you know, do they have enough? I mean, you know, I'm almost like giving them the benefit of the doubt and trusting Jamal Murray, but can I really trust Jamal Murray after 4-for-18 in game 7 against Portland last year? He's still got a lot to prove. And even if you do get it consistently from Murray, you're still going to need a third guy. So Gary Harris is being paid to be that guy. You don't pay Gary Harris that much money just to be a defensive stopper.
Right.
You do so with the understanding you're going to get more offense from him. That's why he's been such a disappointment, and that's why his contract right now, especially since you traded away a guy like Malik Beasley, kind of stings. That's all. Kind of stings.
I will tell you in my travels with Fox and even back to my ESPN days, but here recently, the last 3 years with Fox, when I talk to NBA analysts about the Nuggets, they all like the Nuggets. They all really, I mean, they really like the team. They like the direction. They like everything about it. But most guys would tell you, most of these analysts would tell you, come playoff time, they can't get by the Clippers, the Lakers.
Well, Charles, even Utah.
Yeah.
Charles Barkley came out of the All-Star game and said he does not think they can win a seven-game series against, definitely against the Lakers, definitely against the Clippers.
Right.
And even against Utah, he has questions.
So, but the point that I'm trying to make is every guy that I talk to says not a lot playoff time, not enough legitimate knockdown jumper guys. As things get packed in on Jokic, as things, they don't have enough guys that can consistently knock down an open jumper. And that's what's going to kill them because everything, as you mentioned, defensively gets tighter. It gets more compacted. There's less fast break opportunities. Guys understand and guys have more rest during the playoffs. Guys have more rest than they have during the regular season. It's a bit of a different game. And this is not me. This is not my expertise. Hell, what the hell do I know? What I know is I've talked to a bunch of guys who played in the NBA. Who cover the NBA for a living. And this is what they tell me about the Nuggets. Love the team. Love Jokic. He's an offensive juggernaut. Best offensive center. Most skilled offensive center we have. Best passing offensive center in the game. No question about it. Oh, what do you think they can do? Do you think they can win the West? No.
Well, for all you Gary Harris fans out there, why are so many of the same group of you saying you gotta play Michael Porter Jr. more? Give him more minutes. Why? Because the understanding is that you recognize what we're talking about, that they need to find that third guy. And Porter at least has the potential, although trusting a guy like Michael Porter Jr., as tantalizing as his potential is, to think that as a rookie, which by the way, an up and down rookie season that unfortunately of lately has been curtailed by injuries, is all of a sudden going to step into the cauldron that is the NBA playoffs for 3 months and be able to deliver on that stage and give you that kind of consistent third scoring punch that you're going to need to get past the Clippers probably in round two. Boy, that's asking a lot. For right. this year. Hey, maybe in the future, but for this year, that's asking a lot, which is why I think they made a mistake in not doing more at the trade deadline. And I understand why they traded Malik Beasley, because Malik Beasley, you're not going to re-sign. And you are stuck with Gary Harris's contract. But I think it's worth mentioning that Gary Harris's contract is going to become kind of a real, you know, drag on this team, because you're paying this guy, you know, even by NBA standards, I know NBA contracts are ridiculous, but even by NBA ridiculous contracts, what you're paying for a guy who basically is just a defensive guy is way too much. Way too much. And last night, having Beasley on the other side, just a reminder of that. Let's see. What else? Brady doesn't lose sleep over Mahomes. His life is football. He is wanting to prove he's still the best to ever play. I can't believe you have me defending Brady, but let's get real. Jason from Johnstown.
I mean, you're going to go, here's what you want as the quarterback. All right, you want to go to a place that is the best fit for you. What offense do they run? How much freedom do I have? I mean, look at Peyton Manning when he came here under John Fox. You were over at practice. Peyton Manning was the OC. He was. I mean, he ran practice. So he got to a system in which he got to be able to run exactly what he wanted to run. You think Peyton Manning was going, well, my neck is not that good, and I don't want to have to compete against, you know, Kansas City and Alex Smith and go to Kansas City's tough place to play. And, you know, and, hey, Phillip Rivers is a really good quarterback, and the Chargers are, you know, or Chargers are on the up, and, you know, blah. I mean, He's not the Raiders just drafted a Derek Carr and like he's going to be a really good. No. It's like, what gives me the best opportunity to run what I get to run? And that's where I'll go. So I think Brady is looking at who has the best offensive weapons, who is going to, and this is one of the reasons I think that like the Chargers have changed offensive coordinators. They've done a lot here. They fired their offensive coordinator last year. Like the Chargers, John Gruden runs the West Coast offense. And that's what he runs. Now there will be, you know, John Gruden is a smart guy. He's a smart coach. And there will be some give and take, right? But Gruden wants his quarterback to be under center. He wants to run the football. He wants to do some of those things. And he'll get some pushback from Tommy Cable, the offensive run coordinator, offensive line coach. I mean, they have been built to run that offense. So I think there's more flexibility with the Chargers than there is with the Raiders on offensive scheme and system. Plus, I think when you're talking about receiving core with Keenan Allen, who is as good as you get, and, you know, with Hunter Henry, if they ended up getting him back, I think there's some opportunity there to kind of have a pretty balanced attack. Eckler is, if they get him back, because he's a free agent as well, Eckler is awesome out of the backfield. He's a really good, I mean, he's a good receiving threat. Like, I think there's some, I think that's a better overall fit than what the Raiders are. But either way, I don't think he's going, but I don't want to compete against Mahomes. I don't think that crosses his mind. I
want to bring up a couple of things from conversations we had with a couple of our insiders earlier today. Cecil Lammy was on with us about half an hour ago, and he said, in his opinion, that this wide receiver class is so deep that there are at least 3 to 4 guys that will go in the second round that under normal circumstances, under normal years, would be considered first round wide receiver talents. But because the pool is so deep and there are so many that you've got guys that are first round talent type guys that will drop into the second round. Mark, that just further locks it down for me, further cements the idea that the Broncos would be nuts, crazy, to take a receiver at number 15. For a team that's got still so many holes to fill, knowing that you can easily get a first-round caliber wide receiver in the second round, heck, you got one in Cortland Sutton already that you got in the second round. I'm trying to give the Broncos the benefit of the doubt that we can trust them when it comes to their personnel mistakes. After years of making a lot of personnel mistakes, I'm trying to buy into the narrative that they've sort of figured it out and it's swinging back the other way. If they take a receiver in the first round, that's all out the window again. How can you trust them, really, if they do that?
I just think it's, I think that would be a horrible move. I'll tell you one that makes, here's something that makes sense to me, Mike, because you got a lot of positions to attack, right? I'm just looking at the draft order. The Browns at 21. Are you going to get a top flight tackle at 21? Mm. Because you need a top flight offensive tackle, right? Your tackle just got busted for 157 pounds of weed. And he's a, you know, second overall draft pick out of the, for the Rams, who's turned out to be a bust in Greg Robinson. So you have got to target a tackle. They're at 21. The Broncos are at 15. Odds are you're going to have one of those guys at 15. Well, the Broncos were able to trade down, pick up a second and third rounder, and then trade some of their second and third rounders, get back in the draft in the first round, and get a first-round offensive tackle and a first-round wide receiver. You're not going to take 12 picks.
No, you're not. But
and you would probably get 14 if you traded down just that 6 spots.
But is tackle becoming one of those prestige positions that if you're going to get one in the first round, it has to be high up in the first round? That if you're taking a tackle later in the first round, you're sort of trying to maybe over, you're overdrafting that guy.
Mm-hmm.
you're overselling that guy, that if he's really worth being a franchise tackle, he would have gone high up in the draft. And I'm coming back to Bolsey. I'm coming back to him. Because where did he get drafted? He was 20th. In the 20th, right?
Right.
In the 20s? Point being that if you're looking for a franchise tackle, and that the importance of that position has gotten so magnified,
mm-hmm.
that if you're going to find one of them, it's going to have to be high up.
Well, I think it's a good point. Ramczyk is a Pro Bowler, all pro, who was drafted at 31 or 32.
True.
All right.
True.
So, like, again, you just have to know what you're looking for and what you want. And you know, here's the other thing. You know, with the way this draft is, and you know, with the quarterback, like, I talked to a guy that I trust who's a real draft expert that doesn't like Herbert at all. Doesn't like any of the, after Tua and Burrow, doesn't like any of these quarterbacks. None of them are first round talents to him.
Just Tua and Burrow.
Those are the only two. But you know Herbert's going to get picked up. You know, probably Easton's going to go.
Sure.
There's going to be guys that go in the first round. So all of a sudden, you get through those guys. And now all those tackles, whether it's Jarek Willis, right? Whether it's the kid that, Cecil was talking about. Well, Wirfs is another one. Becton from Louisville is another guy that's supposed to go fairly high. So do you start looking at those guys? You've got the kid out of Thomas, what you talked about. So now all of a sudden you've got four or five of those guys, Josh Jones from Houston, who's climbing up draft boards. So you've got all these guys that are going to get pushed down because people are going to jump up and somebody will take Herbert probably in the first 10 picks, right? So that's going to push a tackle down. Somebody's going to jump up to get these receivers because everybody thinks that receivers are, you know, we're one receiver away from making the playoffs. Like, there's enough of those stupid people out there that just think that that's, you know, if we just get this receiver. I mean, that's the history of this league. Come on, we're one TO away from going to the playoffs. We're one TO away from winning the Super Bowl. I would argue, and Joel Klatt comes on and says all the time, when was the next time that happens would be the first time it happens. Where you, hey, Odell Beckham Jr., if we just get Odell Beckham Jr. in Cleveland, we're going straight to the Super Bowl. How'd that work out? It just doesn't work that way.
It was fun this weekend, if you are of a certain age, to relive. It was it's the 40th anniversary of the Miracle on Ice team that upset the Soviet Union. In my opinion, the greatest upset in American sports history.
The most iconic call.
And the most iconic call with Do You Believe in Miracles? But making the rounds on social media was in the movie Miracle on Ice. Mm-hmm. Kurt Russell played the legendary Herb Brooks.
Great.
And I don't know if the speech was stolen word for word, but my guess is it was probably pretty close. You want a little goosebump feeling right now? Listen to this.
Great moments are born from great opportunity. And that's what you have here tonight, boys. That's what you've earned here tonight. One game. If we played them 10 times, they might win 9. But not this game. Not tonight. Tonight, we skate with them. Tonight, we stay with them. And we shut them down because we can. Tonight, we are the greatest hockey team in the world. You were born to be hockey players. Every one of you. And you were meant to be here tonight. This is your time. Their time is done. It's over. I'm sick and tired of hearing about what a great hockey team the Soviets have. Screw them. This is your time. Now go out there and take it.
Oh my God.
And he just walks out.
Right.
And you know what? You know one of the coolest things about,
oof.
You know one of the coolest things about, the real win over the Soviet Union is if you look at it after they've won,
mm-hmm.
and there's the mob scene on the ice, Brooks just walks off the bench and up the tunnel.
He doesn't, he's not out there. He's not celebrating. He's not, you know, going crazy. He just walks.
He had work to do.
He just walked right up the
tunnel. You gotta prepare for the next game.
The Finns.
Yeah.
Nah, that was cool.
Dude, that just gave me chills.
Mm.
I might cut some glass in the break, if you know what I'm talking about. That's how chilled I am. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Oh, all right. Coming up. How important is it to microwave Drew Locke's development? That's next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.
Earlier in the show, we visited with our Denver 7 insider, Troy Rank, who was at the airport getting ready to head off to Indianapolis to cover the combine. And one of his favorite terms is microwaving. That when you're right. looking at a young quarterback, you got to try to microwave his development quickly. And the idea that there's even more pressure to develop and accelerate this guy's growth this year because there's pressure to win. That mm-hmm. is, as long as John Elway is here, there's an expectation, I think even more pronounced after missing the playoffs four straight years, that this team make the playoffs. I believe there's a Fangio mandate in place here for them to deliver 9 wins and at least be right in the wild card threat. Like right up until the last week of the season. And if that doesn't happen, I think Fangio pays for it with his job. I honestly do. So here's a text I want to get your reaction to. Why do you guys keep talking about wanting to microwave Locke's development? I don't want to microwave anything. I want it to bake and come out awesome. If that takes an additional year, so be it. How do you approach when you have a young quarterback like this? You just take your time. And what does that look like?
Right.
What does that look like versus trying to accelerate things?
I think it's a really interesting question. The whole microwave the development. And I think the whole philosophical approach to microwaving the development is completely off. So, you know, in Troy's case, and in a lot of people's cases here in this particular draft, weapons, got to get weapons. Got to get a receiver, got to get another running back, got to get, you know, this is how you give him the opportunity to push it down the football field and create big plays and do all those things. At what cost? You know, rib shot? You know, to me, the way to develop a quarterback is you build a great football team. Both offensively and defensively. You build, you know, you win. And I'm just telling you, Mike, and I don't think this will ever change. I mean, we can act like it's changed. And maybe if you have a Mahomes, you know, you can get away with it. But when you control the line of scrimmage, you win. You know, everybody wants to point to the weapons that the Kansas City Chiefs have. They want to point to Travis Kelce. They want to point to Tyreek Hill. They want to point to Hardman, the kid they drafted. They want to point to Watkins. They want to point to all these, and they have great weapons. What did I tell you about when they played the Broncos and beat them 23-3 or whatever it was? Probably 80% of the time, they got out 5 wide receivers. You know what that means to me? You got 5 guys up front dominating the line of scrimmage. And that ultimately, to me, is what makes the difference. When you can do that, it's amazing. When you can give your quarterback a little extra time, you can make him, you can keep him clean. When guys can run double moves, right? I mean, come on. 3rd down and 15, they get you with 3 jet wasp. You can't run that. Now,
Patrick Mahomes drifted about 14 yards. He's got a big arm and all those things. Well, Drew Lock's got a big arm. But if you don't hold up for, you know, at least 3 seconds before you break down, and part of the reason you break down is because he took such a deep drop, like, you can't run that play. Your coach doesn't even try that play. So you drop back deep. You have your linebacker's heels at 15 yards, right? You make them throw it underneath. You rally up, and you assume you're going to make a tackle. That's how that usually goes. But if you don't have the guys up front to get that done, you don't have a chance. And, you know, I can go through the teams, the number one seeds. Hey, who are the best running teams in football? Number one seed in the NFC? The Niners. Number one seed in the AFC? The Baltimore Ravens. Team that ran themselves into the playoffs and dominated the line of scrimmage, Tennessee Titans. I mean, go on and on. You know who's one of the best left tackles in all football? The Green Bay Packers and David Bakhtiari, a Colorado kid, right? I mean, you can go through the playoff teams and watch all of them dominate lines of scrimmage. That to me is the biggest difference maker.
Then here's what you do then. This is so simple, and I hope the Broncos can recognize this. The best way to accelerate and get the most out of Drew Lock and put him on the right path is you sign Joe Tooney in free agency to play guard.
Mm-hmm.
Now you got Reisner and Tooney. You draft a tackle at 15 with the understanding that that tackle is going to make or going to be asked to make an immediate impact this year because you no way you can trust Juwan James to play 16 weeks. And even if by some miracle he does, there's a very good chance that this tackle that you draft is going to be an upgrade over Garrett Bowles, who isn't part of your future beyond this year anyway. And then you take and then you tap in the second round with a wide receiver class that is viewed as having 3 to 4 guys that under normal years would be a first round talent, but are dropping into the second round because the pool is so deep. Go out and get one of those guys in the second round to pair with Cortland Sutton. On top of the tight end you took in the first round last year, now you have put all the pieces in place to give your hopeful quarterback of the future every chance to succeed. And if he can't show significant strides this year, well, then you probably don't have the right quarterback. But at least you've given him every opportunity to succeed.
You can't. I mean,
the way you lay that out, how can right. you've done everything you possibly can do for him. Now it's up to him.
All right, let's use the microwave analogy, okay? Yeah, the microwave is the unit that heats the food, right? When you're saying, "Hey, we need to get some receivers and some skill guys, quote unquote, to give our quarterback an opportunity to microwave his development," the food is the microwave. I mean, the food is what goes inside the microwave, right? That's what you're heating up. What's more important, the microwave or the food that you put in it? The microwave's unplugged. You know how hot that food gets? Doesn't work. So you can get all the fancy leftovers. You can get some chicken wings in the microwave. Ooh. You can get some, you know, you love chicken wings.
Work that bone.
Right. You can get some of my wife's you can put some of my green chili in there. Right? Throw some green chili in there. Maybe you're going to pour it over the wings. You can throw, nachos. You can make some plate of nachos, put it in there.
Stop it.
Right?
I'm unhappy because I eat.
You can get all the fancy stuff you want. If that microwave isn't plugged in, none of that stuff's going to get hot. And again, the microwave is the offensive line. You want to microwave a quarterback's development? Give him a running game. Make sure that he's protected. Make sure that because you run the ball so exceptionally well, you know from a pre-snap look what coverage you're going to get. You know they are so scared of you. You know you're getting an 8-man front. You know if the linebackers shift one way, that's the safety that's coming down, even if they show you something else. If they shift the other way, the opposite safety is coming down to make an 8-man box. You know pre-snap exactly what they're in. You're going to get single high. You're going to get one-on-ones on the outside. How much That's microwaving a quarterback's development. That's letting a quarterback understand exactly what they're playing before he even snaps the ball. That's how you microwave a development, not, hey, we got a really fast kid. Put him outside. Now go. Nobody can block, but, you know, we're good.
Coming up today is trade deadline day in the NHL. The Avalanche have made a move. Is it a difference-making move? We'll tell you next. So the Avalanche on NHL trade deadline day have made a move as they have sent a fourth-round pick in 2021 to Ottawa for veteran forward Vladislav Namestnikov.
Dukamasan. That's what I call him.
From Zakuskovy, Russia.
It's even better. Zakuskovy?
Zakuskovy.
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 Oh, I must break you. I would have liked to have seen Montana.
Let's just go.
Yeah.
Red Dawn. Or not Red Dawn. Red October Drop versus Red October Drop.
I'm telling you what. It's a great move. You can't have enough tough Russian names on a roster.
Hey, I don't blame Joe Sakic for making this kind of a deal because he's come up, he's hit on all these kind of players that he has already brought in. Okay, the Nazem Kadres before he got hurt, the Jonas Donskoys, Andrei Burakovsky's put up a career high in goals. So I can see why he's emboldened to make a deal like this for somebody who has been a, you know, productive player in the past. But maybe he feels has another gear left to give.
Right.
And bring him here and he can provide it. So I think it's a good move. I still don't think that they should be done yet. I still feel that they need more depth
on
defense.
When does trade deadline end?
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock. So I still think they need more depth on defense.
Right.
In terms of more just, you know, pure defensemen.
And they didn't give up a player. They gave up
a fourth round pick.
Yeah,
who cares?
So,
who cares?
And you know what we got? We got Dukamasov. I mean. Oh, yeah. Every time this guy takes the ice, this is the song that needs to be playing.
Vladislav Namestnikov.
Vladislav Namestnikov. Dukamasov. Did you see the whole Pepsi Center? Dukamasov's in town, baby. He just rolled in. I think he got it.
This is an earworm song.
Yeah.
Hold on.
You know what I see him flying in on? Like an old DC-10 that has like the props on it or whatever those were, DC-3s or something. Rolling into, what's the airport right across? Centennial,
that's right?
That's right. Just coming in, big Russian flag on the side. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Huge. That would be great.
That'd be awesome.
Come on, he'd have the fur cap on, you know? Fur coat.
Look like.
You step off the plane and go, like, I must break you.
Look like Captain Ramius standing up on top of the bridge.
He does.
Okay. So.
Take me to the Pepsi Center.
See.
Your clothes. Give them to me. Now.
There's not one media member there. Just a guy in a. Like a Prius. You must take me to the Pepsi Center.
Sweetheart, we're married.
Consider that a divorce.
Oh, that's funny. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the Avalanche have made one move.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see if they make more. But the trade deadline is underway in the Avalanche. Actually, they made the first deal of the morning. Was the Az move. So we'll see if there are more coming. Let's get to some of, by the way, one other thing I wanted to get your thought. Did you see, the highlights of the Wilder Fury fight?
Yes. I did.
Speaking of, if he dies, he dies.
Right.
How about, you know, throw the damn towel!
Right.
They threw the towel.
Yeah. That was great. The Gypsy King, right? Isn't that what they call him?
Are you
Are you in favor of the corner making the decision?
Sure.
At that point.
Yeah, he was getting the snot beat out of him. I mean, and by the way, Tyson Fury is a great story, and you know, dealing with mental health issues and like on the verge of committing suicide, and they sort of side by side of him when he was having some issues where he's about 350 pounds. And, I don't know. I just think it's a great story. And I don't know. I think most people, myself included, I think thought Wilder was going to win that fight. Did you? Do you have any?
I know that was the conventional pick. Yeah.
Right. So anyhow.
Well, here's why this is significant. Saturday's heavyweight championship fight broke the record for a heavyweight boxing gate in Nevada. And this is exactly the kind of boost that boxing needs. Because, and I know there are plenty of diehard boxing fans out there, but let's be completely clear on something. If you're ever going to get boxing to be mainstream again,
right,
where people are talking about it, just regular sports fans are talking about it, you have to have a strong heavyweight division.
Correct.
Aside from brief blips along the way,
mm-hmm,
when you had other divisions that people pointed to and said, hey, that's a recognizable,
right,
household name. You know, for a while, like in our, you know, the middleweight with Hagler and Leonard and Duran and all those guys. But what has always made boxing was what?
By the way, that was the early 80s.
It was the early 80s.
And yeah, so early to mid 80s.
Yeah.
So,
but you have to have a strong heavyweight. When you agreed, think about the success, the appeal, the popularity of boxing, it has always been led by what's happening in the heavyweight division.
And by the way, at that time too, the heavyweight division was still,
well, yeah, right,
was still really
right,
good, right? It had Holmes in it, and
yeah,
it had the George Foreman in it,
yeah,
and so they still had a really strong. Remember Jerry? What was Jerry? The
Jerry
Irish
Cooney.
Jerry Cooney, and so I mean, it still had a really strong
Spanks.
Yeah, it still had a really strong, yeah, kind of foothold on boxing. You know, the crazy thing is boxing for a while there without a strong heavyweight division was going the way of horse racing. Remember,
yes,
horse racing was the biggest sport in this country,
yeah,
back in 100 years ago, you know, and so it's good to see it's good to see that kind of excitement. You remember when the Wild World of Sports would be like you could watch heavyweight boxing,
yeah,
for free?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Muhammad Ali would fight.
Sure. But that's why what happened on Saturday is significant. Because for all the popularity that's out there with UFC, for all the popularity that still exists for some of the other heavyweight divisions, let's face it, if you could get back in boxing to have a heavyweight division, I'll just go back as far as Tyson.
Right.
If you can get a heavyweight that has that kind of notoriety and appeal, that blows away whoever the heavyweight champion is in UFC,
mm-hmm,
or the other divisions in boxing. Blows it away. Because that, if you want to get the mainstream sports fan back paying attention, my opinion, it starts with the heavyweight. Starts with the heavyweight division. And that's a division that's been really weak for a long, well, since Tyson.
How good, I mean, I know you remember that we were talking about the Miracle on Ice, and you know exactly where you were.
Don't give me Mayweather. I'm sorry.
No, Mayweather did not.
You're going to tell me that Mayweather captured the mainstream sports fans' attention like Tyson?
All I'm telling you is when Mike taught, like the Miracle on Ice, you remember where you were when you watched it or when they announced it. I remember exactly where I was when Buster Douglas knocked out Tyson because I thought it was impossible.
Right.
I thought I just didn't think anybody could ever beat Tyson. And it was shocking. But every Tyson fight was must-see television.
Correct.
Have you seen some of the things on the internet with him doing like shadow boxing and stuff? Right. Today?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you get hit by one of those and that's it. I mean, that dude is still like lightning quick, and you know he's got all kinds of power. Zero fear. He's frightening.
The Mayweather fans are coming. Come, Mayweather doesn't. All right. And this is both a dig and a compliment at the same time. Mayweather doesn't fight.
No.
Mayweather boxes. He's a technician. He's more interested in just outpointing you. Okay? He's not a fighter. Right. He's a boxer. Now, the sport is boxing. So right. I get it. But the appeal for the mainstream sports fan
right.
has always been the boxers that fight.
Yeah, and it's let's face it, it's the heavyweight division.
Yes.
That's what it is.
Yeah. Lennox Lewis. Somebody brought up Lennox Lewis. Yeah. Another great heavyweight.
Vander Holyfield, the champ.
Yep.
He's traveled with the Falcons. He'd be on the sideline.
Yep. Rocky Balboa.
Rocky Balboa.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Ivan Drago.
Speaking of heavyweights, Sandy and Orlando coming up next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.